Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
This morning with Rod Oram. Morena, Rod, how are you?
Matamaro, Rachel. Very well, thank you.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and we've got some big topics to talk about today. Let's start, shall we, with National's fiscal hole. What's this about, and what is it kind of, I guess, it's telling us about the way that this election is gearing up a little bit?
They're promising to reduce government debt as a percentage of GDP from what we expect will be around 55 to 60%, which is very low, even with all this spending compared with other countries, down to 30% within the first 10 years of getting back into government. But lots of problems arise from that. The first one is that they don't say how they would do that, although the Paul Goldsmith, the finance spokesman, did make some interesting suggestions, like freezing superannuation payments, which would save $21 billion over that time. And I'd have thought that would have been politically unpalatable. But anyway, but first of all, it's very vague. But the bigger problem is there is nothing that Goldsmith or the National Party says that indicates that they understand how much the global economy has changed, not just since COVID, which has been a very great deal, but actually in the years from, say, the mid-2015, 2010s onwards. And that's the thing that concerns me most. What we're seeing around the world is, in the best responding countries, is finance ministers who are getting these heads around these issues and are responding very effectively.
So what exactly are some of those changes that have happened, I mean, since COVID, but as you're saying, since, you know, prior to that as well, what are some of those changes that you think National hasn't quite grasped?
The first one is the cost of servicing that debt. So although interest rates went very low, in some cases negative, in the aftermath of the GFC, now that seems to be deeply, deeply entrenched about very low interest rates. So, for example, the government is being able to sell large tranches of bonds at very low interest rates. So if you compare debt service now to going back, say, 10 years, it's roughly about a half to a third of the cost it was 10 years ago. So the cost of being able to maintain that debt while we work through these very long-term issues is a lot less than it was in the past. National just defaults back to its reflex position that low debt is good and higher debt is bad. And, of course, what's defined as low and high has now dramatically changed. So it's at a maximum of 60% of debt to GDP, we would peak at the top of the current trajectory, where many countries actually started pre-COVID. So that's how big the shift is.
Right.
And in many ways, Goldsmith just sounds like Bill Birch. He sounds like a finance minister from the 90s rather than a finance minister for the 2010s.
So what are some of these things you've said that...
Sorry, 2020s.
What are some of these things that they've sort of suggested might be how they fill this hole through spending cuts? You said superannuation, they've floated that maybe they'd stop payments there. What are some of the other things that they've suggested they might be doing?
Well, the other big claim is that they could lift the growth rate of the economy by about 1 percentage point a year, which would be close to about a 50% increase over the long-term trend. But lots of factors need to be taken into consideration. First of all, growth around the world was on a declining trajectory. And Goldsmith talks about getting back to 3% growth. Well, there are no developed countries around that consistently do 3%, and we haven't for a long time. And it completely overestimates the effect a government can have on those growth rates, and particularly a government that believes that less tax, less regulation is the key to triggering that great surge of growth. And so again, that's a view of the economy which is completely out of step with the long-term trends in our economy and the global economy, and completely overestimates the power of a government to unleash very rapid, by current standards, growth rates.
Well, moving down to the south of the country, what's going on at Lake Onslow? There seems to be a bit of a discussion around electricity and renewable electricity and some spending that the government's proposed to investigate renewable energy projects down there.
The idea is that just east of Roxburgh, up in the hills, there is an existing dam and lake that's been there for a while. But to expand that massively, to turn it into a pumped hydro storage scheme. So it would pull water up from the Clutha River to the west, up into that lake to store it, to be used when in dry years or when dry hydro years or when other renewable energy was intermittent, say low winds and the like. And so that idea of pumped storage is a wonderful 19th, 20th century technology.
Right.
And this would be a very expensive project. The estimates are very broad at the moment because an awful lot of investigation needs to go on, but it could well be around $3 or $4 billion.
Right.
And but it's thrown the electricity market into a complete tizz because you've got gas companies who are still very keen on gas being burnt. You've got companies like Genesis, which is both gas and coal, who are very keen to keep those plants going as long as possible, who are raising all kinds of objections to this. But the biggest thing of all is that at the moment we have a very volatile electricity market, depending on the weather, which is smooth through financial instruments of various kinds and contracts backwards and forwards between suppliers. And that wholesale market has proved incredibly profitable for those electricity companies, those generators and retailers. And so if you dampen down that volatility by dealing with the climate variability with pumped storage, that's a very big hole in their profits. And I think that that's underlying why there is so much resistance. I would add one other point, though. I think it's really important to think how much technology in electricity has moved on.
Yeah.
Pump storage is a very fine old technology, but there are newer technologies that can get electricity generation and storage much, much closer to where the consumer is, and therefore you're not trying to push electricity way up the country on long transmission lines, because the cost of increasing the capacity of those is very considerable.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see how this debate pans out. This kind of segues nicely into our last thing to talk about this morning. Speaking of, you know, renewable energy sources potentially, we've just seen a huge report come out from the Ministry of the Environment, who's released its first report on the risks we face as a country in New Zealand from climate change. And they're pretty substantial because we are an island nation. And I would be really interested in your thoughts, Rod, on how the government, in your opinion, is going to be able to fund some of the supports we're going to need to see and some of the huge changes we're going to need to see in order to make sure New Zealand is able to cope with some of this crisis, because we are already spending a lot of money on the crisis of COVID. Where is the money going to come from for dealing with this climate change issue?
It would be very difficult to find that money if we didn't...
Nope.
If we didn't prepare enough now. And the first preparation is to make sure that what we're building now isn't very quickly threatened by climate. And actually, the Lake Onslow storage question scheme is a question about whether rain patterns are going to hold up to keep being favorable to that location, because it's starting to be over in the dry side of the country. But we're still not making good decisions about the infrastructure we're building with a long-term view to climate. And that's why there is a very important recommendation in this report about having a climate retreat bill to help to codify how we do that. Then the next thing is these are long-term costs in terms of properties and infrastructure threatened by rising sea levels. We need to start storing up a bit of money, but making sure that we're doing good adaptation in the meantime to minimize that cost.
Well, this is going to be a huge conversation that I'm sure we come back to in the near future. So thank you very much for your time with us this morning, Rod. It's always lovely to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks, Rachel. Always a great pleasure to be on with you. So thank you.
We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Okay, see
you. See you. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with